Of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. Brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University. And the following are observations and recommendations for the week of May 10th, 2010. Well, the warm nights have allowed for a growth surge, as predicted, of both turf and weeds. Excellent tips inside this newsletter on annual bluegrass issues, irrigation needs, and efficient mowing strategies. Still, there's many opportunities for seeding damaged areas to compete with weeds. Avoid excessive fertilization during this surge period, as it will likely stimulate top growth at expense of root growth. Annual bluegrass seed heads starting to push through on putting surfaces, and those making more than two application of Proxy Primo, which I believe are likely not needed, would be sure to keep up with top dressing and grooming to reduce scalping potential. The weather information last week was, in fact, the sixth warm week in a row we've had this spring, with temps 9 to 12 degrees above normal and warmest along the coast. The base 50 growing degree days for dandelion control, evening lows were well above normal, and that continues to increase growing degree day units. We're still 10 to 14 days ahead of normal. It is ideal timing for ester formulation for most of the Northeast, except the extreme north. The amine formulation, typical of most homeowner types of broadleaf herbicides like Weed Be Gone and such, is effective well into central New York and across to Boston. Precipitation, it was a very dry week with most areas except New York City and Long Island less than a half an inch. A swath cut across northern New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and across Long Island of 1 to 2 inches. And we still have not received only about 50% of our normal rainfall for the springtime up to this date. We had record amounts of evapotranspiration with over an inch and a quarter to the south and about an inch of water lost elsewhere, typically not seen until well into June when the sun reaches its peak height. Soil temperatures, the two-inch depth have started to surge again with the evening warm temperatures. Lows are only into the 60s into the north and low 70s into the south and low 60s into the north. This week's weather forecast, a moderate dollar spot risk will move in later in the week, so keep mindful of that. And a big change enters early this week with a cold front pushing through, keeping temps 10 to 15 degrees below normal. Maybe we'll have our first cool week this week. Highs in the 40s, only into the 40s, lows into the 20s. Back to normal temps in the 50s and 60s. By the end of the week, and also increasing the chance of rain. Long-term models are calling for a cool, wet pattern. And of course, you can check out all the weather information, weed control information, disease prediction information at our forecast website, www.nrcc.cornell.edu/grass. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update for this week begins with Walt Nelson. Reports very welcome rains has allowed for a surge in growth and also fill the local culverts with high populations of the exotic crane fly Tipula pallidosa. Lawns that don't have this pest problem look great, but if they do, the damage from this exotic crane fly appears to be devastating. Some have actually begun to make the mistake and misidentify this crane fly as sod webworm and make recommendations as such, which of course are going to be entirely ineffective. So much more communication is needed to the homeowner and garden centers about this particular pest. A report from the Adirondacks, Emily Selleck. Dandelions are surging throughout the North Country. Some questions coming in from areas making applications for grubs with pyrethroid chemistry. While this is labeled for control, it will not likely be effective, especially at this time of year, when grubs are typically very large and not as actively feeding. The Capital District update from Dave Chinnery. Growing interest in tall fescue as a drought-tolerant sports and lawn turf, and many questions continue to come in about weed control. The Westchester Report, Jerry Giordano and Rick Harper. Lots of the usual weed questions coming, especially Veronica's and annual bluegrass and flower. There is definitely a spring surge of lawn growth underway as mowing is very active. And the Long Island report from Tom Kowalczyk. Rainfall, along with good temperatures last week, has kept most turf growing nicely. Most of the problems concern ground ivy, dandelion, and some more hairy bittercress. In all situations, the turf density was very thin. Our UMass update, weed update from Randy the Iron Man Prostack. Why is there so much annual bluegrass, Randy? Annual bluegrass is a winter annual that in an unirrigated situation will germinate in late summer, early fall. Overwinter as a small bunch type plant, flower profusely in the spring, then die off in the dry hot summer. Last season was very cool and wet through the summer, allowing for more annual bluegrass to survive as an annual. This combined with poor late season lawn care practices such as fertilization and overseeding leaves turf thin and susceptible to further invasion. Recommendation for annual bluegrass as well as other winter annuals such as common chickweed would be to increase density by seeding and proper fertilization. Products such as Tenacity are expensive and not always provide thorough control. Joanne Grunadorio, our sports turf specialist, gives the sports turf update this week about dry field conditions. It may seem early for dry soil conditions to occur, and they have been found in several areas of the state. When evapotranspiration, ET, which is the water loss from the soil surface plus the water loss from the turf through transpiration, is greater than the rainfall and moisture deficit occurs. The brief, spotty downpours do little to replenish the moisture deficit, and the forecast estimates half the state will have a deficit within the next few days. Visit the forecast website, and especially the grass moisture area where we're looking at moisture deficits, to view the map that shows the difference between weekly rainfall and ET. Negative values indicate the east ET exceeds precipitation. This map is useful for assessing irrigation requirements. For ET and precipitation values for Long Island, go to ccesuffolk.org/growing-degree-days-gdd-. Now is a good time to walk your fields to determine the condition of the turf. Note, if your turf exhibits either bluish-gray color or curled leaves, use a soil probe to check the depth of moisture in your soil. Use your experience and observations to assess the situation and determine the appropriate management practice. Dry soil conditions are less of an issue when you're able to irrigate. If you can irrigate, be sure to water at least 4 to 5 inch depth just below where the majority of the root system is found. Keep in mind that the amount of water to apply at any one time will depend on the amount of water already in the soil, the soil's water holding capacity, and the infiltration rate. Take care not to apply more water than the soil can absorb. Also, your upcoming field use schedule, both games and events, and predictive weather will all factor into how much water you will water, how much you will water, and when. Under really dry conditions, when wilting is observed, you cannot irrigate, it's important to minimize traffic and wear when possible. The Rutgers Diagnostic Update from the Laboratory Coordinator Richard Buckley. Pink snow mold persists in what has been reported as the warmest April on record. We had a couple of periods of cold rain. The cool and wet weather during the last week of April completed the disease triangle and drove cold weather turf diseases into the lab. Turf samples submitted from regional golf courses were diagnosed with pink snow mold, which is caused by the fungus Microdochium nivali. This disease, also known as fusarium patch. Small bronze patches and slight rings suddenly appear in the turf during the wet weather. It's not uncommon at this time of year for the fungus to spread on mowers and rollers and cause bronze streaks of unthrifty turf. Yellow patch, which has its own alias, cool season brown patch, and is caused by Rhizoctonia cerealis, was also diagnosed on a pair of samples from as far south as the Philadelphia area. Be aware that these diseases will continue to pop up during cool, wet periods into late May or even into early June. Brown ring patch. Interestingly enough, as the weather moved back into unseasonably warm territory, yellow patch's cousin, brown ring patch, began to flare up in golf course turf. Rhizoctonia circinata causes brown ring patch. This disease is very similar to yellow patch in initial appearance, but has a higher temperature threshold and does a little bit more damage. This is a disease that takes a very long time, 10 to 14 days of incubation, to confirm identity, and therefore is often diagnosed based on symptom description and environmental conditions thought to be associated with the pathogen. Many of the typical Rhizoctonia materials, except thiophanate methyl, Cleary's 3336, will perform well on this pathogen. However, recent product evaluation research from Professor Frank Wong, the University of California, Riverside, found that Headway, a premixed combination from Syngenta of propiconazole and oxoxystrobin, provided excellent suppression. Dollar spot. Lastly, got the first dollar spot samples in the laboratory yesterday, confirming the forecast model predictions of last week. Our samples come from golf course turf, but I've also seen disease in my travels on fine fescue and perennial ryegrass landscape turfs. My gazing in the grass update this week starts with mowing. Mow big, straight, and fast. As mowing is in full force with the spring surge of growth underway, it's time to begin to consider the most efficient means of doing so from a fuel and carbon emissions perspective. A recent study conducted by the Toro Company attached GPS units to various types of golf course mowers to investigate mowing efficiency. Looking at smaller mowers versus larger mowers, mowing speed and mowing pattern, they concluded that speed and mower size matter most. Mowing an area at 5.8 miles per hour compared to 3.5 miles per hour reduced fuel and labor expenses by 35%. Mowing with the least amount of turning and the largest mower that is practical all reduce carbon emissions and costs. And finally, a comment about the warm nights we went through. It is amazing how the little triggers can get things going. In this case, it's about warm nights. While the Growing Degree Day models clearly show we are well ahead of the 15-year average for heat accumulation, it was not until adequate moisture and warm nighttime temperatures arrived that growth began to surge. Avoid excessive fertilization at this time, and many who have over-fertilized prior to this point are likely to begin to pay the price for extra mowing. Especially slow-release nitrogen that releases with warm soils. As the surge comes, so does the desire to mow more frequently, and while it is a great idea for sports and golf turf that desire density and traffic tolerance, many lawns can be let grow beyond one-third growth, especially if clippings are being collected, a practice we generally do not recommend unless the clippings themselves will smother the turf. Finally, for golf turf, now is an excellent time to groom and top dress putting surfaces, as growth will likely push through material and prevent sand pickup, as well as avoiding puppy growth that could lead to scalping. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, the Associate Professor of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.